credit scores, down payments, interest rates. Car buying can be a numbers game, but you don't have to be a math expert to get the keys to your dream car. Just use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. Crunch your numbers and get personalized results so you know exactly how much you'll pay each month for your car. It's like having a magic wand for your wallet. Presto! The car you've been wanting is now within reach. So hit the road and leave your calculator at home. Auto Trader.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck. Jerry is not here. She stepped away for a minute, digitally speaking, but she's still here in spirit. So this is Stuff You Should Know.
Jerry's looking for love in all the wrong places, right?
That's right. And Chuck, I was not really cognizant of what was going on when all of this was happening. But there's a period of time where, like, country was just beyond cool in America. Like, it was the popular culture.
Yeah. I mean, I really remember it. And you're, what, 5 years younger?
At least.
Never gets old. It is a time that I remember well, when the TV show Dallas, and when country, you know, had these big crossover stars like Eddie Rabbit and Juice Newton, mm-hmm. and Mickey Gilley and Kenny Rogers. And Kenny Rogers was making these big Hollywood movies, and Dolly Parton was making big Hollywood movies. It was... Mm-hmm. It was an interesting time, and it was sort of the beginning of the change of country music from sort of more underground outlaw cowboy Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings stuff, mm-hmm. to the big AMA's country thing that we see today. And I think the transition was kind of happening back then in the late 70s, early 80s.
That seems to be where it finds its roots, is in this area, this era, where it turned into pop, basically.
Yeah.
And the transition from, like you were saying, that kind of outlaw, like hardcore country, to pop by way of easy listening, which is a pretty hard left turn if you think about it. But that easy listening was featured prominently on the soundtrack for a movie called Urban Cowboy.
You betcha.
Which... In one of the more surprising things I've ever come across in our research in the 13 years we've been doing this. Happy anniversary, by the way.
Yeah. Like right now-ish, right?
Basically, yeah.
All right.
And close enough that it's worth saying happy anniversary for.
Thanks, man. You too.
One of the more surprising things I've ever come across is that, since we're talking about Mechanical Bulls today, you can't tell the story of Mechanical Bulls without John Travolta.
I know, right?
Who knew? Not me. Did you know that was tied together intimately?
Yes.
Urban Cowboy and Mechanical Bulls?
1,000%.
Well, it was a big surprise for me, and a pleasant one, too. Like, I'm still on cloud nine after learning about that.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I guess I was a little kid, so you would have been just a bebe at the time. So it makes sense that this is more cemented in my memory. But I remember Urban Cowboy. I just remember it all being a very big deal. Like people like Olivia Newton-John were making country albums that normally didn't, because it was just the hot ticket. It was a big deal.
Yeah, it really was. I watch enough MeTV and stuff to be able to recognize this era.
What's
MeTV? And it not seem weird to me. I think it stands for Memorable Entertainment Television. It's all old
nostalgia.
Reruns from the 70s.
Is it a channel or is it like a streaming app?
It's a channel. We have one of those like antennas you can get,
mm-hmm.
a digital antenna.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of like really good rerun, like what's the word I'm looking for? I guess nostalgia TV,
mm-hmm.
out there. And MeTV is one of them. But anyway, it, you know, every once in a while, probably every 6th or 7th episode of Bionic Woman or $6 Million Man, we'll suddenly have some weird country trucker lumberjack theme going on.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's like, it's because that was the cool thing right then, you know?
It was. I mean, like I said, Dallas was a big TV show, and the Dallas Cowboys and the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders was the biggest thing going, and mm-hmm. BJ and the Bear and the Dukes of Hazzard, and
right.
It was this weird time in America where like this Southern and Western country, Western culture was at the fore. It's very strange. And it coincided with punk and new wave. And you know, right. it's a very weird kind of cool time in this country, I think.
But the one of the things that came out of this, one of the things that was popular at the time that really tied into this country zeitgeist that was like the basis of the pop culture at the time, was mechanical bull riding.
Right.
That is something you would do if you were trying to show off at some bar. It doesn't matter where the bar was in the United States, and I suspect in other parts of the Western world as well, that you would ride a mechanical bull wearing a cowboy shirt and tight jeans, even though you were from, you know, Miami or something like that.
Yeah, it's funny when I was reading this and they were saying like, they have them in New York and they had them in New York and Los Angeles and it was popular everywhere. The first thing I thought was, I bet they had them in Japan.
Surely. I was looking, I'm like, I wonder if it's just some like throwback retro like mechanical bull riding trend somewhere in the world. I couldn't find any mention of it anywhere, but surely it is somewhere, you know?
It seemed like a good fit. But the mechanical bull, if you don't know what one is, you're not under a rock, everybody. You could be very much aware of many things in the world and not know what one is. It is...
Boy, Chuck, you've really softened and mellowed in your old age.
I really have. It is a simulation of bull riding, the rodeo sport of bull riding. It is literally a mechanical bull, and mm-hmm. we'll talk about how it's made and what it looks like. But, you know, it's go Google a picture. You sit on it, mm-hmm. and someone is in control of it on the other end, and it mimics the bucking of a bull as if a human were riding on it. And they are very popular in bars, touristy bars usually.
And Japan.
Maybe in Japan. There's one in New York City at Johnny Utah's that I have some stories about later. But the mechanical bull basically can be used to train a rodeo rider, although it's usually just for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, what's really interesting about what you just said, that it's used for training, is it's not entirely clear if the mechanical bull was used to train rodeo riders first or was used as an amusement at honky-tonk bars first and then became used to train rodeo riders.
Right.
It has a really hazy origin, and it's possible that it evolved in parallel in multiple places because there was a need for training rodeo riders on artificial bulls, because part of rodeo that kind of grew out in the 19th century in America as rodeo riding developed based on some of the Mexican blood sports with bulls as they made their way up north in the United States, the southwestern U.S., bull riding just kind of came out of nowhere. Rather than, you know, toreadors, it got translated into bull riding. And if you want to train on riding a bull, you're way better off finding something to simulate the bull than learning how to ride a bull by riding a bull, you know?
Yeah, although, you know what, I did see somewhere, and I couldn't verify it in a lot of places, but I did see in the 16th century in Mexico, they were actually riding bulls.
I mean, I believe it.
Yeah. So that might have just been a part of the blood sport of bull fighting.
If you're a tough guy and you see a bull, you say, I'm going to ride that bull. Watch this.
Maybe so. In the 1930s in the United States, the Rodeo Cowboy Association was formed. So it was a full deal by the 1930s. The one thing we do know is that the precursor to the mechanized or mechanical bull was the bucking barrel, which if you could just do an image search for bucking barrel, you've probably seen these at some point. It is a barrel, like a oil barrel tipped on its side with a saddle on it. and it's suspended off the ground and tied at four corners with some pretty heavy duty tight rope. And you would go sit on that barrel on that saddle, and you would have four ranch hands try and throw you off of it. And imagine that was a lot of fun.
Yes, which, I mean, it's dangerous in and of itself, especially if the ranch hands are jerks. But it's a lot safer than riding a bull when you're practicing to ride a bull.
You know? I would ride a bucking barrel if I was at one of those city slickers, like cattle rustling things. And they were like, "You want to get on the bucking barrel, partner?" I'd say, "Heck yeah!" But you could not pay me to get on a real mechanical bull.
Oh, I don't know. I was watching some. There's like mechanical bull throw compilations, people falling off mechanical bulls.
I watched quite a bit of this.
What's the funniest ones are the ones that happen in slow motion.
Yeah.
Like the camera's not in slow motion, it's just the person is sliding off in slow motion.
Yeah, that's usually how it works instead of really being thrown.
You're right. It seems
pretty, my leg's on there.
Pretty not dangerous. So I would ride a mechanical bull if I ever encountered one.
Yeah, I'm not into it.
But we'll talk, man. That's fine. I won't yum your yuck.
Well, I mean, we'll talk injuries later on. It can end up pretty badly.
I think we should. It's worth saying. We're like, you can really get injured on a mechanical bull, maybe not live bull level, but don't ride live bulls anyway. Let's just put that one out there. And then if you're going to ride a mechanical bull, know that it's still very dangerous and can be.
That's right.
So,
should we take a break?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
We won't come to blows. It's fine. I'll just go along with it.
All right, we'll take a break and then we'll talk more about this funny thing right after this. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Learning stuff with Joshua.
So, Chuck, I was saying, like, the origins of mechanical bulls are fairly hazy. We are pretty sure that they came from the bucking barrel, that preceded them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not entirely clear that the mechanical bull descended from the bucking barrel in the rodeo world or into the amusement world first. Like, Ed put this together for us, and he looked high and low to find primary source, but couldn't find one. But he saw a lot of like mentions of a place called Bertrand Island, an amusement park in New Jersey, that supposedly had a mechanical bull back in the 30s.
Yeah, this was in New Jersey. And I think this is what the deal is. I saw this referenced a lot online, and there is a coffee table book about Bertrand Island Amusement Park. Mm-hmm. And I bet you dollars to donuts there is a picture of this Ride 'em Cowboy Ride in that book, because they all reference this book, but I didn't have time nor the inclination to buy this book to prove it to myself.
Okay.
But I have a feeling that there was a picture of this Ride 'em Cowboy Ride in this coffee table book about Bertrand Island Amusement Park in the 1930s.
Okay, I've got a great idea. Let's get in the Wayback Machine,
okay,
and we'll go to the printing of that book, and we'll look through one of the books. Are you ready?
No, well, why don't we just go back to the Bertrand Island Amusement Park in the 30s and ride the thing?
I guess we could have done. Okay, all right, let's do that.
I mean,
instead.
Or we can go to a book printing shop.
Okay, we'll go to Bertrand Island. You ready?
Right. Yes, let's do it.
Okay, right. Here we are. There it is.
There it is.
We have definitively proven it. There was a Ride'em Cowboy mechanical bull. Bertrand, what year is it right now?
Well, I'm looking at my shark surf watch, and it says 1932.
Okay, 1932 mechanical bull at Bertrand Island Amusement Park.
All right, I guess we should just go back. All right, well, it's weird that we went back and we didn't ride it or get any saltwater taffy or hit the big strongman bell. Like,
could have just gone to do the printing press place.
I guess we should have, huh? Lesson learned.
We probably had a little candy dish with saltwater taffy there that we could have grabbed.
So if you talk mechanical bulls, you're going to hear the name Sherwood Cryer come up a lot. Some people might mistakenly say he invented the mechanical bull. Certainly could be looked at as the sort of grandfather of the mechanical bull. But he owned a mechanical bull in his saloon in the 70s that we'll get to later. But it was built by a man named, actually, I don't know if he built it. Joe Turner built it. But Joe Turner in New Mexico, at the very least, held the patent for this mechanical bull.
Right. I saw it with my own two eyes, but it's from 1976.
Right.
So Joe Turner definitely didn't invent the mechanical bull, although he was an inventor of the mechanical bull. But we can say definitively, since Sherwood Cryer bought the patent from Joe Turner, that Sherwood Cryer is not the inventor of the mechanical bull, even though I believe even Wikipedia cites him as the inventor.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised to see that.
Right.
But yeah, he's very widely held to be the inventor. But he even said, there was an interview with him in the Austin Chronicle in the late 90s where he said, he talks about how he bought it off of Joe Turner for $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it will become clear why he did that and why that was actually a really good move on his part later on.
That's right. But if you want to talk about the mechanics of the mechanical bull, it is a hydraulic-based machine that has a couple of motors on it. It's got a center shaft and a main gearbox that make up the spin motor. And that's the one that's going to spin it. It's going to turn it back and forth. It usually, when you see them operated, they usually rarely even go a full 360 before they turn back and go the other way. Cause that's kind of the whole object, is to keep this thing moving in different directions.
Right. And it's turn back in the other direction is usually very sudden and harsh.
It is abrupt.
There's an abrupt, thank you, buddy. And then there's another motor, usually above the bottom motor, and that motor has to do with moving pistons up and down. Like, imagine a platform that the saddle sits on, that the bull is built around, that the rider actually sits on this platform. It moves from side to side and up and down and left and right. So you have a lot of yaw control is what you need when it comes to riding a mechanical bull, because there's pitch, yaw, and what's the third one?
Roll.
You got all three of those going on in this mechanical bull, I believe.
Right. If you see one of these in a bar or if you rent one, I love that Ed did the research, and Ed lives in Buffalo, New York, and said, in Buffalo, you can rent one for 3 hours for $900 and it comes with the operator and everything. I heard that. And then I thought that might have been a fun 50th birthday party, but unfortunately right. In quarantine, it'd be like three or four people standing around. That's not
you
quite
could,
so fun.
You could ride it on Zoom for all of right. your party guests.
But it is mounted very, very securely to a big floor plate, and it is surrounded. I think Sherwood Cryer would drive around and collect mattresses at first, but now they have this big inflatable ring basically that surrounds it. and it's got a saddle. It's usually the horse itself is fiberglass or it's metal maybe, but it's covered in this sort of thick padding with leather, right, and then a real deal saddle.
Yeah, and the ones today, there were plenty built in the 70s and 80s and even in the 90s that look like old carnival funhouse rides, mm-hmm, basically. The controllers are real, like, old and janky looking and colorful and kind of cool and retro. The ones today are touch screen. They have, like, speakers built into them. The padding around them isn't like a mattress. They're, like, blown air, like a bouncy castle kind of thing. So when you get thrown, it like, doesn't feel like anything. It's actually kind of pleasant. And the controllers are much more computerized and less mechanized than they used to be in times past.
Yeah, and these days, if you look at Urban Cowboy, too, it is just sort of the body, if you would, of the bull. Now, if you go to a Johnny Utah's in New York or any kind of fun house.
Are you getting free drinks there or something?
No, I just learned of it, and I didn't know that there was still an Urban Cowboy type place in New York that you could go. I think it's got to be close to Times Square. It's in Midtown.
An urban cowboy bar that's referential to Point Break.
I know,
that's like,
right?
Man.
Covering all the bases.
Yeah.
They have little fake foam bull heads and horns, and apparently, mm-hmm, you can even find them with, if you want to ride a bison or a ram, like a sheep, you can get a sheep's head put on or a ram's head put on.
Oh, it goes even more than that. I looked,
oh, really?
It up. There's a hammerhead shark.
Oh, gosh.
Camel.
Okay.
Hot dog, banana. And then apparently there's like this tawdry thread of bull riding.
There's a sexual element to it, I think. Yeah, sure. I mean, Ed found one of the settings is sexy.
Right, right.
On the actual operations of one machine, Ed found it was like pro, intermediate, beginner, and sexy. So it's definitely fair to say.
Okay. And also, what I turned up goes way beyond a sexy setting. There's there's a penis one you can get.
Sure.
There's a woman called Horny Hannah, and there's a guy named Randy Roger.
Oh boy!
So it gets pretty
stupid.
Sure. It gets pretty like dark bachelorette party really, right, quick. if you want it to go that way, apparently you can make it go that way.
That's right. We were just speaking of the settings. There are those automated settings usually that you can just hit pro or beginner or whatever, but you can also be in control. And I think the automated settings are much more common these days. I think back in the Urban Cowboy days, it was very much about a human operator, mm-hmm, trying to, you know, really simulate a rodeo for these sort of, I was about to say pseudo competitions. They were competitions in bars.
Yeah. I mean, there would be like, you know, you could win, you know, $100 or something like that.
5,000 in Urban Cowboy.
Okay. All right. So there was like a competition, but also like in bars, it was, you know, just to show off too. Like that was the whole reason. That's the entire reason for mechanical bulls. If you're sitting there wondering like, why does anybody do this? It's basically to just show off, to stay on as long as you possibly can, basically. And so, like you were saying with the original operator, the operator's job was to humiliate you. That was the whole dynamic. You showing off, the operator trying to throw you off in a very humiliating fashion. And so the more you could stay on, or the longer you could stay on, despite the operator's best efforts, you know, the more of a show-off you were, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's not any different. It's not a far cry from any carnival game,
right,
where it shows some sort of feat of strength, whether you're hitting the thing with a hammer to make the bell ring or the punching bag to see how hard you can punch a thing.
Right.
And the ones that you rent today for the parties, Ed described it as an all-in-one entertainment center. I mean, it's got a built-in PA system with speakers and a microphone and an amplifier and an electric scoreboard and timer. And
right,
it's just this big thing now, whereas it started out as just sort of this very, very rudimentary hydraulic thing.
Yep. Which makes sense because, again, this is the kind of thing that you can rent like a bouncy house, but for grown-ups.
Yeah.
Although they have little kids ones too.
I heard about those.
And then something else I saw is there's a So there's like the riding the bull version. There's also a surfboard version that you stand on.
Yeah, okay.
And I actually saw a video of a dude who combines those two. Look up on YouTube, man dances on mechanical bull wearing best Sunday suit. And this guy is in a bar wearing a tie.
Uh-huh.
Not just standing up, dancing on a mechanical bull that's going at a pretty moderate rate.
Wow.
And it is one of the most astounding things I've ever seen in my life.
Amazing.
Yeah, but there's the version you can rent that or buy, I guess, if you're into that kind of thing. That is, it's like a surfboard and like the bouncy area around you, the padding is like a wave kind of thing. It looks pretty cool.
Well, that's fun.
I thought so too. It looks fun, at least.
So if you're going to ride one of these things, I will say most of the videos I saw at Johnny Utah's, among others, is they keep it pretty tame. Although we'll talk about the dark side of that in a bit too, but if you're going to get like a real ride, then you want to go as forward on that thing toward the head of the bull as much as you can.
Right.
You want to grip that bull with your inner thighs and dig those heels in and keep your feet ahead of you and point those toes.
Yeah.
Apparently you want to, you know, they have a strap that you put your hand in and then you put the other arm up and they say to hang on with your non-dominant hand.
That's all I've seen.
That's all I've seen, too. I don't know. I feel like I would be stronger with my dominant hand, but I don't know.
I think you're using your non-dominant hand because any stupid hand can hold on to a strap. Your dominant hand is balancing. You're holding it up in the air to balance, and you need a little more finesse.
Okay.
I think that's why.
Yeah, all right.
That's my guess, and it makes sense to me because that's my guess.
And what you want to do is you want to go opposite. That's the whole idea.
Right.
If the bull bucks forward, you want to lean back. If it goes back, you want to lean forward towards its nose. You want to keep those legs tightened down as much as you can, and you want to try and keep everything from the waist up as loose as possible. But again, if you've been throwing down cowboy boot mugs full of beer.
At the old Roy Rogers.
Just do whatever you want, and good luck.
So this advice comes from a pro rider named Will Roberts, and he basically says that if you take each one of these movements as like a wave that you're riding, and think of them discreetly as discrete motions, and you're just handling each one at a time, you could stay on indefinitely. He didn't say the indefinite part and said, in fact, he said you shouldn't stay on longer than 15 seconds or else you're going to get hurt, like at full bore. But I think you could stay on indefinitely.
Well, one of those videos I saw was titled something about woman rides bull for so long that video cuts out or something like that.
Oh, is that right?
Like she never fell off. I mean, it was going really slow, but, you know, she hung in there, hanged
well,
in there.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
It depends on which one you rented.
Well, if like we said, the rental price, if you want to buy one of these systems, it's about $20,000.
I saw that too, but I also saw one on eBay for the suspiciously low price of $6,800. And it's possible the whole thing was used. I think if trampolines are one of those things you buy and then end up just wanting to get rid of, a mechanical bull is probably 10x that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I would get on a mechanical bull where someone's like, I got a really good deal on it.
Right. It's basically free.
All right, let's take another break, and we'll talk about, to me, what is the most interesting part of this episode, which is sort of the history of Gilly's Saloon, right after this. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests and tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. Hey, everybody. You know, asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest.
That's right. They're committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional. They offer financial planning services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances, and they customize them for your needs.
That's right. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more. And that's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
Learning stuff with Josh.
Okay, Chuck, you promised to talk about Gilly's Saloon. What is that?
Well, we talked about Mr. Cryer. He owned a saloon that was really kind of an oversized tent called Shelley's in Pasadena, Texas, outside of Houston. And this was in the early 70s, like 1971, and he would bring in country singers who weren't big national acts yet, but they were sort of known regionally. And it was a popular bar, and it was getting bigger and bigger because that was oil country. People came in with some money, and he said, you know what? I think this needs to not be a tent, but to be a real deal saloon. And he partnered up with a man named Mickey Gilly.
Right. And I mean, he gave him a pretty sweet deal. He said, look, I want to build this thing out. I'm going to build it out. We're going to make it a more permanent structure and turned it eventually into like a 40,000 square foot bar, multiple bars. That was basically like a real deal Texas roadhouse and honky tonk. You, Gilly, we're going to name it after you, and you and your house band are going to play basically every night.
Yeah.
And Gilly, did you say that that was Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin?
No, but he was.
He was Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin. Still is, possibly. Is he still alive?
Yeah, Mickey Gilly is 85, and he had that big crossover hit with Looking for Love.
Soundtrack, right?
Was it on the Urban Cowboy soundtrack?
I'm pretty sure it was on the Urban Cowboy soundtrack, yeah.
Yeah, or as Buckwheat would call it, Bookin' Pa' Nub.
Wookinpanub.
Wookinpanub.
Okay.
And he was no slouch, though. He had 42 top 40 country singles in his career.
So what's funny is if I read an interview with him, I think in Texas Monthly on like the 35th anniversary of Urban Cowboy, and he basically talks about how, you know, he was looking for love, but it was in all the wrong places. He was looking for stardom and he just could never quite get it. So I guess he was one of those unsung, like highly successful people who never became a huge star.
Right.
And apparently he was trading on being Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin, mm-hmm. was doing like tribute shows, cover shows, that kind of stuff, and was doing fine. But so when Sherwood Cryer met up with him and formed a partnership with him, he became the namesake of Gillies, this incredibly popular honky-tonk outside of Houston that became the setting for Urban Cowboy thanks to, randomly enough, an Esquire article.
Yeah, this reminded me very much, and it's weird that they're both Travolta, but Saturday Night Fever.
It's tied even more closely than that. The very editor who ran that Esquire article was the same co-founder of New York Magazine who ran Tribal Rights of the New Saturday Night, that gave rise, that was the basis of Saturday Night Fever.
All right, so it all comes full circle. I printed that out, the Tribal Rights of Saturday Night, back when we talked about it, have not read it yet, and now I'm going to print out The Ballad of the Urban Cowboy and America's Search for True Grit.
Right.
And I'm going to have just both those articles sitting on my desk forever, probably. But I want to read them both, because they were both the basis of two sort of landmark 70s movies that became cultural touchstones, and John Travolta was in both of them.
Yeah, it's really weird, but it's cool. Basically the same thing, except one is disco, set at a disco nightclub. The other one is country music, set at a country western bar. But it's the same exact thing, same format, mm-hmm. love, fighting, rivalry, jealousy.
Competition.
Basically on a weekend night while everybody's getting trashed at a bar. It's just... And they were separated by 2 years. I think 76 was the Saturday Night New York Magazine article, and 78 was the one that featured Gillies.
Yeah, it's really pretty interesting time in our country's history that they're almost two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
And again, like I mentioned earlier, this is all going on at the same time that like punk music is saying, I hate all of you people.
Exactly. And for good reason, look.
That's right.
So this guy, I can't remember his name, Irving something.
Berlin?
I can't
remember.
No, he was one of the managers or promoters, or he had a lot to do with the Eagles. He bought the rights to that article for like $200,000, which is a lot of money to spend on a magazine article option at the time. And he just knew that no matter what happened, he was going to have a huge soundtrack on his hands, just like Saturday Night Fever.
And it worked twice.
It did work. He apparently wanted it to be all Eagles, and the Eagles were like, no, that's okay. We suck so terribly that we wouldn't want to do a whole soundtrack.
Stop.
But it ended up being like a really great soundtrack. I've never heard it, but I mean, just looking at the roster, Kenny Rogers, Charlie Daniels, Bonnie Raitt, Mickey Gilley had Looking for Love on it as well.
Yeah, Wookinpanub. It was great. We had the record in our house. Like you said, they shot the movie. A lot of it was shot at Gilley's. That was the bar scene that, you know, was predominant in the movie, and the competition between Scott Glenn and John Travolta as, you know, they battled for bragging rights, cash money, and Deborah Winger's heart.
And glory.
Of course, the glory.
Man, Scott...
Scott Glenn?
Yeah, I can't believe I just forgot his last name. I think he's one of the coolest actors ever.
Yeah, not a Carradine.
No, he's a Carradine plus.
Yeah, I think Scott Glenn was one of those that was always... I think he was always confused as a Carradine with a lot mm-hmm. of people because he sort of has that look.
Sure, for sure.
So it was the big success of this movie that made Cryer say, I need to secure this patent because this thing's about to explode. And I think by that point, the gentleman who held that patent,
Joe Turner.
Yeah, Joe Turner said, well, let's up the price a little bit to $30,000. And Cryer still said, yeah, don't tell this guy, but that's still a pretty good deal.
Yeah, because the mechanical bull is basically a third lead character in this movie. Deborah Winger, John Travolta, and this mechanical bull, El Toro, the real mechanical bull at Gillies, and became a huge part of the pop culture. And Sherwood Cryer was smart enough to realize how big of a deal it was going to be, bought the patent for it. And now, if you wanted a mechanical bull for your bar that you just converted over to a honky-tonk format, you had to go buy one from Sherwood Cryer. And he made a lot of money off of those, from what I understand.
He did. I think he even won lawsuits when people tried to dodge his license. Mm-hmm. And he made a lot of money off of this fad. And it was indeed a fad, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But like I said, you go to Johnny Utah's. There was one on the Sunset Strip, too. I don't know if it's still there. There was a... God, what was the name of that place?
Johnny Mnemonics.
No. Another Keanu Johnny movie. I can't remember. But there was a country western bar on the Sunset Strip that had a mechanical bull as well.
I can't remember either. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I can't remember the name of it. It's super famous, right?
It was for a while, and it wasn't even that long ago. Like, I think when I lived there, it was still there.
Supercuts?
No, and not Hogs and Heifers. That was in the Meatpacking District in New York. But
gotcha.
This is what genuinely kicked off that whole movement that we talked about at the beginning, with Southern culture and Western culture kind of being at the forefront, and all these people doing crossover records and pop music and country sort of intertwining, and the lines being blurred, and the Dallas Cowboys and J.R. Ewing. Like, this sort of all started with Urban Cowboy and this mechanical bull, El Toro.
I would argue that it started before that, and that Urban Cowboy was on.
Yes, you're right.
Was catching a wave that was developing.
Yeah. You're totally right.
And gets credit. But I mean, like, if you look at Convoy, that Kris Kristofferson movie. Yeah,
I'll look
at
Convoy.
That's from 1978. So that was a couple of years before that. But it was the same year that article was published in Esquire. So it was all kind of coming together, congealing at the same time.
Yeah, Urban Cowboy didn't kick it off. It capitalized early on what was coming, for sure.
But it came in at like, at a time when it could still be considered cool and a huge contributor to the spread of it, right?
Yeah, and this was like, it's funny, like I kind of look back with some fondness, even though it wasn't my scene, but if you talk to any of the old timers from back then, they called them gilly rats, these real, you know, these local bar patrons they were the real deal. They hated all this stuff, man.
Yeah, because it brought in all the posers and the tourists and, you know, people on business trips passing through Houston had to go to Gillies. And I'm sure it just took something that was really sacred and special to them and commodified it in a really sad way. I'm sure it was terrible.
Yeah.
At least for a while. And then I'm sure it went back to normal again, generally.
And they were still on that bar stool in the same place.
Exactly. It just all kind of happened around them. But speaking of that kind of country chic trend that Urban Cowboy was a huge part of, I saw a reference to a Fantasy Island episode from 1982.
Oh, boy.
Called Everybody Goes to Gillies. Mickey Gilley played himself.
Awesome.
And his fantasy was to make it big in the country music scene. And I think he may have gotten it. I think it was successful.
I wonder if Tattoo got up on that thing.
I don't know. I could not find the episode. I just was reading about it, which is kind of disappointing when it comes to Fantasy Island.
I wanted to see that movie, the Hervé Villechaize movie with Peter Dinklage, but I never got around to it. Did you see that?
I forgot that they made that. No, I haven't seen it. No.
So as far as Gillies goes, I wondered, you know, I wasn't sure the deal. And I was like, surely you can still go to Gillies. But you can't, because Gillies burned to the ground.
It did, suspiciously. Apparently, it was ruled an arson. And this came after there was a dispute between Mickey Gilley and Sherwood Cryer. And apparently, Mickey Gilley, who had been approached by Sherwood Cryer to basically come in as a partner on his bar, came out victorious, triumphant, and ended up on the winning end of this dispute and apparently walked away with most of the profits. And I guess Gilley said in at least one interview that he expected that it was Sherwood Cryer who had burned Gillies to the ground in 1989.
That's quite an accusation.
It really is. But I was reading again that Texas Monthly article. I think it's called Urban Cowboy Turns 35. And it's like an oral history, which is the laziest form of journalism, but it's still pretty
engrossing.
Oh, I love
oral histories.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, then that explains why they keep making them. I thought it was just like, I don't feel like actually writing today. I'm just going to transcribe.
Oh, I think it's kind of cool. I like them.
Well, you would like this. You should read it. It's very long, and it's really in-depth, and they talk to some of the original Gilly Rats, and a couple of them who worked for Sherwood Cryer have to say, like, this guy was an amazing human being, but he was also somebody who would beat someone with a pool cue if, like, they were causing trouble at Gilly's, and did do that. And, like, you did not want to run afoul of this guy, but was also, like, a really fascinating, interesting, smart human being, too.
Yeah, shout out to Texas Monthly, too. That's a really good rag.
It really is.
I read a couple of things from there for some podcasts we were developing a couple of years ago, and it was really good. They did these great deep dive, oral histories, but like, you know, real journalism.
Long form. Yeah. There's a guy named Skip something. Oh, man, I can't remember Skip's name. I'll look it up, everybody. Don't worry about it. But Skip Hollinsworth or something like that. He's one of their better journalists for long form at Texas Monthly. He's great. But there's a lot of them. They have a good stable there.
Totally. And in 2019, they announced that there would be a new Gilly's. But it's not just going to be a bar. It's going to be a 16-acre multi-use development. And apparently El Toro survived the fire, and they're bringing the original El Toro back just to put on display.
So I found one reference that El Toro survived the fire. It was in the Ocala Star Banner. And what does anybody in Ocala, Florida know? I don't know. But they said that El Toro survived the 1989 fire and that it was moved to Cowboy Jack's in Woodbury, Minnesota. So
that's
I looked up
specific.
Cowboy Jack's. There is a cowboy. Right. I thought so, too. Cowboy Jack's makes no mention of having the original El Toro at any point.
That's suspicious because you would really lean into that.
Oh, dude. It's all I would ever talk about to anybody. But that's what the Ocala Star Banner says. Cowboy Jack's does not back it up. So who knows exactly what happened to El Toro?
That's right. Like, don't get on that bull of Johnny Utah's. You're going to catch something. You come ride El Toro.
Going to catch some Johnny Mnemonic on that thing.
There were some injuries, though, that we would be remiss without mentioning. There have been plenty of lawsuits over the years. There was a woman in Santa Barbara County that was left a quadriplegic when she landed on her neck.
Oh, boy.
So, obviously, if you get thrown off something, if you land wrong, that can be bad news. A man in Bergenfield, New Jersey, in Bergen County, was left with permanent injuries. And then at Johnny Utah's, a New York woman won $70,000 because she tore her ACL at Johnny Utah's. And her lawyer said this. They just kind of throw people around while they're drunk.
I think that guy summed up the mechanical bull about as good as anybody ever has.
Yeah, that was how he described the operators. He said they just kind of throw people around. And then I went to YouTube, looked up Johnny Utah's. And if you want to spend some time looking at very bad camera phone videos of drunk friends filming drunk friends, riding very slowly on these mechanical bulls to bad music. You can do it. But you can sort of see in a few of these videos, there would be some drunk lady or a drunk guy who was just, you know, being kind of obnoxious. And you could tell that but they weren't coming off. And you could tell that the operator would get sick of it. And they were going real slow. Then there'd be like a zoop.
Right.
And just a really quick little flick of that switch. And it would just like toss them off of there real fast.
There is no way that there's not a term among mechanical bull operators for that move.
For that move.
Yep. There has to be.
Oh, 1,000%. I wonder what it is.
If you know, please let us know because we have to know.
We got gillied.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You got anything else?
Thankfully, no.
Okay. Well, that's it for Mechanical Bulls. If you want to know more about Mechanical Bulls, then start watching thrown off Mechanical Bull videos. There's, like you said, a lot of them. And since I said thrown off Mechanical Bulls, it's time for listener mail.
You know what I was just thinking? This could be the jackhammers of the next generation of stuff you should know, listeners.
Mechanical Bulls?
I don't know. Was it good?
I think Urban Cowboy saved it. Without Urban Cowboy, absolutely.
I think you're right.
And then John Travolta saves the day again.
And then it hit me. I was like, the common denominator, hydraulics.
We got to avoid hydraulics from here on out.
I think you might be right, dude.
All right. So where are we, listener mail?
Yep. I think Jerry already did the chime.
All right. I'm going to call this CIA correction from Anonymous.
Oh.
Hey, guys. I've been a Stuff You Should Know listener for years. I love the work you do. As someone who was formerly employed by the CIA, I particularly enjoy the latest episode on Havana Syndrome. I've since left that job because of ethical concerns, but I have one nit to pick, and that's when you talk about people who work in the CIA, you call them agents, which is not right. They're actually officers. There is no such thing as a CIA agent.
Mm-hmm.
This is news to me.
This basically ruined the entire episode for them, that one thing?
No, they're nice, but I mean, we always say CIA agent because we're children of television and film. I didn't know it wasn't even a thing.
Everybody says that.
They say this. I know the media gets this wrong a lot, so it's understandable that's the terminology that folks use, but in the interest of always learning and improving, I thought I'd pass this along.
Very nice.
Josh actually did say officer a couple of times somewhere in the middle, and that was the exception for you guys.
That's great.
Other than this admittedly small quibble, I love everything you guys do and often use my favorite old episodes to calm my anxiety or to help as I fall asleep.
Awesome.
Currently in heavy rotation in the Max Headroom Incident and Star Wars Holiday Special episode.
Ooh, those are that will calm you down for sure.
Yeah. Thanks very much for reading the message. All the best, Anonymous. And initially Anonymous said maybe use my initials because it might be a little paranoid about this being former CIA. But then they said, you know, how about just no initials?
I think that's smart. Just go with Anonymous.
Exactly. In fact, I made this whole thing up. There is no former officer that left for ethical concerns.
This listener mail will self-destruct in 3 seconds.
2, 1.
Well, if you want to get in touch with us, we love hearing from people, whether they are from the CIA or the NSA or the FBI. Who else, Chuck?
Oh, ATF.
Sure.
And that's it. No one else.
Okay. If you want to get in touch with us and send us some trade secrets, we would love to hear that stuff. You can wrap it up. Send it in an email off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's Rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.